Welcome to A State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with business leaders to discuss what it takes for a company to be in a state of readiness and become a higher performance organization with your host, Joseph Paris. Welcome, everybody, to this next episode of State of Readiness, a fireside chat with your host, Joseph Paris. With me today, I have Carl Kirpus. Carl and I have met some time ago, and we've been in each other's orbits for a good many years. But he's a business leader with experience in strategic planning, operational planning, and organizational cadence implementation to lead constant improvement initiatives while overseeing management of day-to-day operations and developing high-performance teams. He's known for bringing systemic solutions to strategy and innovation through execution. Carl's worked in both the energy and manufacturing industries with roles including crude oil strategy and analysis, excellence and innovation leader, and vice president of operations. He currently resides in Findlay, Ohio, where he works for Marathon Petroleum Corporation at their company headquarters. Welcome, Carl. How are you doing today?
Doing good, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Now, when did we meet?
Joe, I think it was initially back at Institute of Industrial and Systems Engineering Conference. I remember hearing you speak on a panel and kind of talk about your career journey. I think you started all the way back with when you were delivering newspapers and working with your father. And so really neat that it's come full circle here and we're able to chat together again today.
That's right. Yeah, that was at the time. It was the Institute of Industrial Engineers. They didn't add the systems piece, right?
Correct.
And,
yep.
And This is going into Dr. Whoopi's Wayback Machine. All right. So I got to tell you. That was like a career panel discussion. You know,
correct.
People from MedX and Amazon and whatnot were on there.
Yeah, it was a really good panel of different industry leaders, and was really inspired by some of the words that you shared at that point. So hopefully some of the audience here today will have some good takeaways again from what you and I are able to talk about.
Yeah, and that's got to be a darn near 10 years ago, I would imagine.
I think so, yep.
Wow, long time. So, about your journey, I mean, where did you start? Where did you go to school?
Yeah, I went to school at Iowa State University, got degrees there in industrial engineering and manufacturing systems engineering, as well as mechanical engineering. And really,
you got degrees in all three disciplines?
Yeah, so I have the master's in systems engineering and a two bachelor's in mechanical engineering and industrial engineering.
Awesome.
And really, outside of my education, though, you know, that's really when a lot of lessons that kind of started to shape who I am and my career really started to take root. So when I was there at Iowa State, I played on the football team underneath Coach Rhodes and really learned the mentality of being all in.
And that's what position did you play?
I was an outside linebacker for Iowa State.
And you're talking about all in?
Yeah, and being all in, really applying yourself to whatever you're doing and, you know, making sure that you're doing it right so that you don't have to do it again. You know, I still think back to those drills when we were always, you know, you had to run through the line, not just to the line, right? And I learned a lot about the work ethic there that I think I've been able to take and apply to my career beyond that.
Now, did you get a football scholarship to go to Iowa State?
No, I actually walked onto the team, and it was just a passion of mine, something that I loved doing. And so Coach Rhodes was a coach that I could see myself playing for, and so when he came and joined the organization, I went out, walked on with him. We had the opportunity to go to a bowl game down in Tempe, Arizona, and learned a lot. So I really enjoyed that journey.
That's amazing. I mean, it's amazing. Now, you had the opportunity to compete for a scholarship there too, right? I mean,
So that's correct. So I, through the honors program at Iowa State University, had the opportunity to apply for and compete for the Rhodes or the Marshall Scholarship. The way our university ran it is we applied for both in parallel, and kind of through that process, that's really when I was able to discover my passion for industrial and systems engineering and its ability to transform industry and academia. And I think, you know, industrial and systems engineers today are really posed well to be able to help organizations create a state of readiness, which I know that you've written a book on and have some great insight for individuals interested in learning more about that. But that's really where my journey started, and I started to gain that passion for industrial and systems engineering and the power that it would be able to deliver to industry and academia.
So after you graduated, where'd you go? Or where'd you land right after you graduated?
So for the Rhodes Marshall Scholarship, I was a runner-up. So that means if one of the other individuals didn't go, then I would be selected. And it's such a great opportunity. Everyone, all the other finalists decided to move forward. So I ended up going to Genesis, which is a company that design, builds, and installs production and assembly lines for a lot of large manufacturers. And while I was there, continued to pursue my master's in systems engineering as well. So it was neat that I was able to continue that education and really learn and apply that there at Genesis. And I think that helped me really be able to grow quickly through the organization. Within less than a year of being there, I'd moved up through the company and was the vice president of operations, had seven department managers and about 80 employees in my part of the company. And there I learned a lot about kind of just the scope of a business, because the area that I was leading really touched all different parts of the organization. And so and that's when I got a lot of scope in terms of my career and the way that I was able to impact the organization.
Now, that was your first job out of university, was Genesis?
That's correct. That was the first role that I had following Iowa State. While I was at Iowa State, I had the opportunity to actually work for ProPlanner. They're an industrial engineering software company that Dave Sly founded. And so through some internships and then full-time over the summer, I was able to learn a lot about industrial and systems engineering through that as well, and apply that to Genesis. But Genesis was the first full-time role that I took on after completing my undergraduate.
Okay, so from being hired, your first job after university to being the VP of operations was a year.
Yeah, I started out in the solutions development department, so Genesis doesn't have a product line. Everything they do is custom design, build, install. And so it's a sales type role, but it was working with clients to develop their solutions for their production and assembly lines, because that everything's being custom built. And so I was in that role for about 6 months when the current vice president of operations had some family things he had to take care of. And so he was in and out for about the next 6 months, and I was helping him as much as I could through that time while continuing to do my solutions development role. And at the end of that, he actually decided to retire. And by that point, I'd been working with a lot of the department managers, and the president, CFO, CEO felt like I was the best fit to take on that role going forward. So that's how I moved into the vice president of operations role within a year.
All right, so how long were you at Genesis?
So I was there between 6 and 7 years. So I had the opportunity to be in that VP role for about 5 years. And I was talking with a lot of my mentors, and they recommended that if I was going to continue to grow my career, that I go get experience working with a larger corporation. So I had been with Genesis 5 years. If I was going to move up, it would be at the president or CEO level. I had been in discussions with the current president and CEO at that time about that, but they're two brothers in their late 40s, early 50s, a lot of runway left. And so at the same time, I got a call from Jose Perez to come and join his company down at Endeavor. He was growing an excellence and innovation team there, applying a lot of industrial and systems engineering concepts. And I saw it as an opportunity to not only have scope across the entire organization, but also scale. And so decided to go and join his organization.
And you were there for, and with some of the experiences that you had at Endeavor.
So at Endeavor, I joined the company 3 weeks before an announcement was made that they were going to get bought by Marathon.
Oh,
And
wonderful.
so, yeah, so it was a really interesting journey where we were doing these excellence and innovation projects across the entire organization. Jose, I think now is actually on the board of the Operational Excellence Society with you, Joe. So he was a great mentor and leader for me over the course of that transition. Taught me a lot about how, life happens on the edge of fear and excitement. And when you're living in that space, that's when you're really pushing yourself and growing yourself. And so we had the opportunity to deliver a lot of value to the organization over the course of those 6 to 9 months. And at the end of that, another leader reached out to me, asked me if I'd move up to the new company headquarters in Findlay, Ohio, and join the crude oil strategy and analysis team, being able to look at projects 6 months to 5 years out. And I saw that as a neat opportunity for my career because now I'd gone from scope and scale to looking out into the future, really applying that vision and being able to help the company make the decisions today to set them up for success on that time frame.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the acquisition of Endeavor by Marathon.
Yeah.
Companies get their corporate culture, right? Every company's got its own unique corporate culture. And my experience has been that whenever there's an acquisition of or a merger of two companies, there's a lot of peril found in culture clash. Were the cultures very similar? Was it a somewhat easy transition, or were there some rocky parts?
For me, Joe, having only been at Endeavor for about 3 weeks, I hadn't been ingrained in that culture yet. So I was more of an observer, kind of seeing the two different cultures. And Endeavor was a very fluid organization, a lot of talent from different companies that would come and join Endeavor, like myself, right? Had experienced career hire coming in and joining them. And Marathon had much more of a culture of individuals coming to the company and staying with the company for a very, very long time. Where, when you hear about people retiring, they've been with the company for 30 years, 40 years. And so there's strengths to both of those, right? There's strengths to being able to bring in that outside talent, and there's strengths to being able to retain talent and that knowledge base for a very long period. So what I think is unique about the combination is now we're able to bring those two cultures together and find a way to get the benefit out of both.
Excellent. So of the crude oil strategy and analysis, that's I don't know if that's your title or if that's what you do. It sounds like what you do as opposed to a title. Talk a little bit about that. What is crude oil strategy and analysis?
Yeah, so crude oil is the product that's going into the refineries before they refine it and make things like gasoline and diesel and jet fuel. And so my focus within the business is to look at how we're going to get the crude oil from the wellhead. So Marathon isn't a producer. We don't go and take oil out of the ground. But what we do is acquire it from those producers, either at the wellhead or at trading hubs, and then we get it to our refineries or sell it into the market, depending on the market dynamics at that time. And so a lot of what I'm doing is logistics related, looking at what's the best way to have the most optionality in the system while at the same time, doing the appropriate level of capital expenditure so that when we're out in the future on that, 6 month to 5 year time horizon, we've made the decisions today and built out the infrastructure appropriately to be able to capture those market dynamics and get the right types of crude to the right places at the right time.
Yeah, super, super. So, let's move on a little bit. You had mentioned earlier, and it's actually rather interesting because I met a gentleman earlier today, or had a conversation with a gentleman earlier today that actually had the converse experience to you. You spoke about mentors.
Yeah.
Okay. And you specifically said your mentors, plural. So you had mentors along your journey. I have a couple of questions. How many mentors did you have?
You know, it's hard to look back and count. I guess the best way that I can describe it is I was talking with Greg Goff, who was the former CEO of Andeavor. He's now the executive vice chairman at Marathon Petroleum Corporation. And when Greg and I were talking, we were discussing how really when you look at mentors, if you just learn one new thing from each person that you meet, they in a way can have a huge impact on you, your career, and in an essence serve as a mentor to you in terms of your career progression and personal growth. And so I really have taken that to heart and lived it myself. So I would say there's a number of people who've had significant influence on me over the course of my career. If I were to look at individuals, I guess in more of the sense that most people would define mentors, I would say about a half a dozen or so are individuals that I've had a more of a mentorship relationship with on kind of a continual basis.
Yeah, the conversation that I had, I actually talked about what I called stealth mentors. And to me, a stealth mentor is a mentor that they don't know they're a mentor.
Yeah. That's very good.
You know, we have like formal mentors. Like when I was younger, and starting my business, I had a mentor out of Ithaca, New York. His name was, Frank Pelangeli, went by the name of nickname Pogo. And he taught me a lot, and he was a formal mentor. You know, it's not like we had a session every, well, actually we did have a session every week, but it was dinner at his place, with his family. but it wasn't like, it wasn't structured like I'm going to mentor you today on this thing. It wasn't like, you know, going to a karate lessons every week, you know? It was very free flowing and dynamic. There was no real agenda. You know, basically it's like what's on our minds and we'd share and whatnot. And, that's a formal mentor to me. But then I have, you know, nearly countless people that have been mentors to me that they didn't know they're actually being mentors to me. You know, I would observe, you know, there are people that I might admire or there are people that I might, follow or who might interest me. And they don't know that they're actually giving me mentorship.
No, I agree. That aligns really well with what, Greg had shared with me as well. And something that, actually at my first role back at ProPlanner, I mentioned earlier, an individual there told me, you know, look at the individuals in the organization that you look up to or maybe aspire to be someday and keep track of all the things that you think they do really, really well and even the things that you don't want to do when you're in that position. And in the way, you know, those individuals, even if you're just observing them, like you mentioned, are acting as stealth mentors and helping you develop yourself as you look to become the leader that you want to be.
Yeah, that's incredible. So how about any, you know, personal or professional challenges that that you have faced and have overcome or they have overcome you?
Yeah, I'd say from a professional standpoint, early in my career, we talked about before, I'd moved into a leadership role fairly quickly. And I had a large scope of the organization, and I wanted to make everything better all at once, right? And we were able to accomplish some pretty significant success in that time frame. I think we were able to grow the book value of the company by over 300% and move 80% of the projects to positive cash flow. But in the early phases of that, I was trying to improve it all at once. And when we started to make really significant progress, the way that I overcame that challenge was really focusing on the more the 80-20 rule, right? What are the things where I can apply, the 20% of the things that are going to get me 80% of the results, get the organization 80% of the results. And when I was able to really, in a way, narrow my focus to be able to create more value, that's when I saw us really start to move the needle. So from a professional standpoint, I think, how you focus that at your efforts was one of the things that, as a young leader earlier in my career, I had to overcome.
One of the things, you're an industrial and systems engineer, and certainly you've grown your leadership skills over time and have demonstrated that. But what I find interesting is that you haven't spoken about any of the we'll call it the underlying disciplines of industrial and systems engineering, the tool sets, if you will, for improvement. And the reason I bring that up is because it's obvious that you're very people focused and very team focused. How did you get that skill set through your coursework?
So I would say, first on your comment of using the tool sets, such as like Lean or Six Sigma, a lot of those tools, I've deployed a lot of those over the course of my career. But what I found in organizations is that sometimes though you can use the tools without specifically calling out the tools. So for example, when we were doing the constant improvement projects, we were focused on excellence and innovation, and that encompassed Lean and Six Sigma, but it was only a part of it. Just the constant improvement wasn't enough. To your point, it's really the people are the ones that create the results, and the focus needs to be on the people in order to generate the type of environment and the culture that the organization needs to really be able to excel. And I'd say I'd learned that actually back at Iowa State when I was leading a number of student organizations there. I deployed a concept that I kind of developed and called reflective leadership. And so what I would do is I would be in a leadership situation and I would, do that to the best of my ability. But afterwards, I would reflect back on it and say to myself, what went well in that situation? What could I have done better? And then I would envision the ideal scenario, the way that would have played out if I would have done everything perfect. And then the next time I was faced with a similar leadership challenge or opportunity, I already almost had that play film in my head, and I was almost able to just hit play and then proceed forward. But after that, again, went through the same process of reflective leadership and fine-tuned it again. And through that, what I found is that individuals really provide the potential in organizations, but it's teamwork that creates the results. And that's what it kept coming back to as I really refined my leadership skills through that reflective leadership mentality. And I think that's really what's driven my focus on teams and people is through that process, recognizing how it's the teams that create the results in organizations.
So it sounds like me, sounds to me that your experience on the gridiron with Coach Rhodes really made an impact on you.
It did, yeah. That all-in mentality and the teamwork there too. When you're out on the football field, each individual has a job to do there, right? Each individual has a potential. But if you have, a defensive lineman that starts to try to play defensive back, it's not going to work. You need each of those individual strengths. But then you also, as the leader, can help individuals recognize what their strengths are, how they can contribute the most to the team, and help them align with that position so that when you, in a way, can kind of be the orchestra conductor, really setting the tone and the rhythm for the entire orchestra, each person playing their own instrument, or in the football case, their own position, create an organization, a culture, a team. Where each person's individual strengths are utilized, and you're able to, play that piece of music or, have a really strong defense.
Super, super. Well, listen, we're going to take a break and come back in a few moments. You're listening to State of Readiness podcast with Joseph Paris and special guest Carl Kirpus. We'll be right back. This episode of State of Readiness, sponsored by the Operational Excellence Society, a think tank, a creator and aggregator of knowledge and know-how, serving businesses and professionals who wish to learn more on the various topics which combined comprise the discipline of operational excellence. Learn more at www.opexsociety.org. Welcome back to State of Readiness. I'm Joe Paris, and with me is our special guest today, Carl Kirpus. Welcome back there, Carl. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks,
still good?
Joe.
Still good? Good. All right. You know, we're in the tail end of the of our fireside chat today, our conversation. I think I got to thank you for your contribution thus far. It's been really, really engaging and very interesting. I really admire the form and the purpose of your journey. And I really think the experiences that you gained under Coach Rhodes really had a major influence. And I'd have to reflect on our conversation and that pivot point, if you will. But I really think that made a positive and indelible impression on your personality and on your career. It's all to the positive, of course.
Yeah, I agree that being a student athlete as well as participating in a lot of student organizations did have a very positive impact that set me up well to really ingrain some of those key concepts in me, like being all in, reflective leadership, realizing that, you know, teamwork creates the results that I was then able to continue to refine and apply over the course of my career.
So how do you satisfy some of your continued thirsts for knowledge?
You know, Joe, I wanted to thank you for creating the Operational Excellence Society. It's something that I've continued to turn to in terms of being able to read latest articles out there and find things that I can apply in that process of reflective leadership to continue to improve my own leadership capabilities and the state of readiness within organizations that I'm a part of. So, you know, I remember one article that was written specifically on the OODA loop, and that was something that I thought applied really well to the plan, do, check, act that we talk a lot about in industrial and systems engineering and many of the other processes that I've seen, and something that I really took away and have applied back to my career. And just the environment there that you've created as the founder of that society and a space for that content and collaboration to come together is something that has really helped me continue to quench my thirst for that continuous improvement. And just wanted to say thank you for creating that.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much for that, Carl. You know, it's been a long road with the OPEX Society. We've been around for quite some time, and there's probably about 1,200 pieces of content out there on the site now. You know, we harvest and we create our you know, have contributors, you know, build that body of knowledge over time. But it's interesting that you picked on the OODA loop, because that's a personal favorite approach of mine. You know, I have to think, give a call out to one of my mentors in this is Matt Boom Daniel, Marine aviator and graduate of Top Gun, who indoctrinated me into the idea of the OODA loop. And you're right that there's a lot of parallels between the OODA loop and PDCA or even DMAIC. But I think the big difference is OODA relies more on native, almost genetic knowledge. When I say genetic, you know, knowledge that is so ingrained in you that it's just part of the way you do things. You know, you don't have to think about it; you just do it.
I agree. Yeah. There's that you know, different levels of competence, and there's kind of that unconscious competence and the conscious competence, and reading the article about OODA loop, being able to observe, orient, decide, and then act. For me, it kind of took it from a level of unconscious competence where I may have done that in the past to now I had a framework to put that to, and it became more conscious how I was applying that cycle, and that allowed me to then be able to refine it and improve it through that process of reflective leadership. And so that's one of the things I really liked about that article specifically, was that it helped me go from unconscious competence to that level where now I understood what had been, driving some of those decisions, that process in the past.
Yeah, and if we think about, time being the enemy of the 21st century company, you know what I mean? If we could, even in the PDCA framework, if we can cycle through the PDCA in half the time, that's to our advantage. Same, with the OODA loop, is all about speed, but it also means that, we have to quickly analyze our circumstances. It's like, what are probable problems? What are possible problems? What are far-fetched problems? You know what I mean? And we have to be able to analyze that and evaluate that, because we're not, even with PDCA, okay, you're never going to be perfect, right? There's
I
always
agree.
something that's going to go awry, and what happens then? And sometimes I think that with consensus leadership, what happens is that people make decisions, mediocre decisions, too late. So, for instance, in consensus leadership, I'm not a metallurgist. You're a mechanical engineer, right? One of your degrees is in mechanical engineering.
Correct.
I'm not a mechanical engineer, and so you have some exposure to materials and material characteristics, no doubt.
Yeah, I do. Yep.
Okay, I don't. So, if we had a problem, if you and I were both looking at a problem, and you had this really cool, creative, innovative way of overcoming this problem, but it was a little out there. But I have to sign off on it because I don't, but I don't know anything about metallurgy.
Got it.
I'm going to be resistant to this innovative way because my signature is going to be on it.
Yep.
Okay? So you either have to convince me, which is a big hurdle because I don't know anything about metallurgy. You either have to convince me that your way is really, really cool, or you're going to have to dummy down your solution so that I could accept it.
Gotcha.
But that going back and forth is costing time. So now we're late.
Yep.
And the chances of you being able to educate me enough to where I put my signature on it is limited. So we end up with mediocrity.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. It's a
Yeah.
good analogy, and I've seen some of the best organizations where they're able to, back to kind of individual strengths provide the potential. They're able to put people in places where their skill sets and expertise align with that what that role needs, and then they're enabling them with the authority, the tools, the skill sets in order to go and make that happen for the organization.
Yeah.
So, and
Yeah.
that creates that speed that you're talking about that is so critical today. Even when we look at, some core industrial and systems engineering concepts like Moore's Law, if things today are improving at an exponential rate, not at a linear rate, and that's really hard for our minds to grasp because often we're really good at comparing two different things or thinking of things, from a linear standpoint. But when we start to think about exponential, it becomes hard to grasp, and exponential means that we need that speed in order to be able to stay with the change curve that's going on so much in technology and in organizations themselves.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the strengths of the OODA loop is that it teaches you how to make decisions from incomplete data.
I agree.
I mean, at the end of the day, how much data do you have to collect and analyze in order to absolutely guarantee a result?
A very large amount, probably
Yeah.
to your point, so much that by the time you've made the decision, it might not even be relevant anymore.
Yeah. And I would say that there's no amount that can absolutely guarantee it.
Yeah, I
You
agree.
know, absolutely. So, so at the end of the day, every decision we make is really just a wager. It's a bet.
Yep.
You know, we make that decision when our level of confidence exceeds our level of fear.
Yeah, and I think, the individuals that are making, some of the biggest changes are, like you mentioned, able to quickly get to that point where they build that level of confidence, and they make that bet, and they also understand that, there's different types of failure. You can have a catastrophic failure, which is one that maybe you take a little bit more time to analyze before you make a decision, but there's also the little failures, or failures that might be impactful to the business, but are reversible. Jeff Bezos talks right. about the one way and the two way door. And if it's a two way door, a door that you can go through and then come back through, that's when you have the ability to act fastly, and you should act fast, because that decision in a way is irreversible or not catastrophic to the business or the individual. So I always try right. to keep that in mind, and as I'm making decisions and looking at the amount of information that I need, whether it's a one-way or a two-way door, and if it's a two-way door, that really frees up my mind to be able to make that decision with maybe a little bit more uncertainty, but in a way that it can still create a lot of value for the organization yeah. just due to the yeah. speed.
All right, so we're going to get to the speed round here. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. And you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So who is the one leader you look up to most, and why?
I mentioned him earlier in the podcast, Joe, and I'd say it's Jose Perez, who's on the board of the Operational Excellence Society. And really it's because he taught me that life happens there at the edge of fear and excitement. And it's something that's really pushed me and pushed my career, and something that's really helped me embrace life and failure and success.
Awesome. And what's the best piece of advice you've ever received, and whom, and from whom?
So this is one I haven't touched on yet, but it's that at times you don't need to know the full path. You just need to know the right next step and be directionally correct. And that's helped me get unstuck when at times I felt like I was stuck and didn't have a clear path on the future. And so knowing that I just have to make the right next step enables me to do that, and from there learn, and then take the next step following that. And I actually learned that from my father. He's the CEO of the TPG company, stands for Transform, Perform, and Grow. And it's something that I've carried with me throughout my career.
You know, it sounds similar to, fail small, fail fast, learn and move on.
Yeah.
And I think they've codified it now in the agile approach to deployment.
I agree. Yeah. It's all about continuing to move forward or move in the right direction. You know, a lot of times, sometimes you have to tack, go back and forth to yeah. get to your destination sooner. I think about that in terms of like sailboats, right? If you try to fly in a straight line, if the wind's going against you, you're not going to get there, compared to if you tack back and forth. As long as you're making that right next step and moving towards the destination, you can reach the other side of the lake or your destination faster, sometimes yeah. by changing course better than you can by moving in a straight line.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's a personal habit that contributes to your success?
For me, I'd say it's just my internal drive to learn. I love learning. I think it's one of my biggest strengths. Like we mentioned before, I get a lot of value out of the Operational Excellence Society and learning from there. But learning, I would say, is the internal habit that's really driven a lot of my success.
Yeah, and also that's demonstrated in your involvement in the Institute of Industrial and Systems Engineers. That we've been to together for all these years.
Yeah, that's correct. I've learned a lot yeah. through IISE. It's given me the opportunity to enter into a lot of volunteer leadership roles. I know when I was the chair of the Industry Advisory Board, you and I have had the opportunity to interact and collaborate there, Joe, with the Operational Excellence Society. And now that I'm the IISE Senior Vice President of Industry on the Board of Trustees, hope to be able to continue that collaboration.
Yeah, that's a long time ago, man. That's one thing I like about that conference too. You get to learn a lot of things, a lot of new things, but to me, one of the most valuable pieces of that conference is the networking. You know, how I met you, for instance. But yeah. Even beyond the networking, oftentimes I find that it's group therapy.
Yeah. Right?
You know, people go there saying, oh, I have all these problems. And, you know, my company doesn't, you know, trust the organization, you know, my efforts, or they don't give me enough support. And maybe it's me and it's me, it's me. And you go there and you discover that everybody else has got the same problem. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's not me.
Yeah. When I went to my first Institute of Industrial Systems Engineering, IISE conference, one of the sessions I attended was the Industry Advisory Board Town Hall. And when I got there and I started hearing about the other challenges and successes that the other individuals in that meeting were facing, other representatives from industry and industrial and systems engineering, really across the gamut of different types of organizations, I felt like this is my home. You know, this is where I belong. This is where people who understand what I'm going through as a leader and as an industrial and systems engineer are also facing those same challenges, to your point. And I've been going back ever since.
Awesome. So one last question.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a moment to think about it, because it's going to be a little bit of a short question, but it's going to be a little heady.
Okay.
If you had one do-over, what would it be?
I think if I had one do-over, I would say it would be, to your point on the speed and being able to deploy success quickly, it would just be the speed at which I was able to learn some of these different lessons. And, you know, so looking back, it seemed fast at the time, but as I've continued to grow in my career and my abilities, it would be neat if I could go back and find a way to learn some of the things that I did even faster. So to be able to deploy, you know, the concepts of individuals provide the potential, but teamwork creates the results, or be able to deploy the idea of that life happens on the edge of fear and excitement. If I think back, you know, I've been able to, through teams and others, create some really awesome results. I think we could have even created more results. And if I had a do-over, I'd be learning some of those lessons even quicker to be able to achieve even greater success.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for taking the time to join me today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Joe. I think this is another great example of you creating a space for content and collaboration to happen, and really just enjoyed the fireside chat here. It's always good to catch up with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Carl Kerpes from Marathon Petroleum Corporation, Crude Oil Strategy and Analysis. Thank you very much, Carl.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you for listening to State of Readiness. You can discover more episodes and learn about the book written by Joseph Paris of the same title at www.state-of-readiness.com. You can learn more about Joseph Paris at www.josephparis.me/card.